Radioactive, you're going live in 3, 2, 1.
You are now listening to Radioactive Youth Media's podcast.
It's October. The days are getting shorter, the weather is becoming colder, and the leaves are falling. It straddles between summer and winter, between life and death. This is Maria del Mar Cawagden. I've heard that ancient Celts believe that the month of October marked the end of summer and the harvest, and the beginning of a cold, dark winter, a time of year that was often associated with human death. Back then, it was believed that the time has come when boundaries between the worlds of the living and the spirits overlapped, and the dead would return to Earth. Now, we just celebrate this day as Halloween with candies and treats. The children dress up in costumes, they laugh and play, while I, on the other hand, cower in fear. When I was young, I saw things. Things I cannot explain, heard sounds that should not even be there. My mom once told me that the night is the perfect environment for entities that are not of this world, and now I'll be even more afraid of the longer nights that are soon to come. I thought I was the only one, and I thought these unexplainable events were simply childish hallucinations, until on the day of my birthday, some of my family members told me their own experiences.
Wait, is it recording?
Yeah, it's recording.
No, man, it's recording. Back in the Philippines, when I was about 6, we had a blackout. So my parents had to go to the living room and get some candles, because it was pretty dark. And I was sitting there, you know, just minding my own business. And then all of a sudden, like, I looked out the window and I saw kind of like a floating candle. There's a tree there, right? You know, who would have put a candle there? Everybody's inside. If it was on the tree, I would know the difference, but it was literally levitating. I stared at it for like a good, I don't know, probably like 10 seconds. I literally ran to the living room because I was in the kitchen. I came back. It was just not there anymore. But it was just that moment where I just froze for like 10 seconds trying to look at it and trying to decipher what it is, but until I realized it was just levitating.
I remember when I was still in middle school, summer 8th grade. Me, my sister, and my dad still sleeps together in one bed. And I remember this one night where, I mean, I was supposed to sleep, but I'm not. I'm talking with my best friend over the phone. Since I don't want to wake up my sister and my father, I sneaked out. I sneaked out of the room, went downstairs to my cousin. And so that's where I hang out. And then suddenly, a few minutes later, I heard footsteps upstairs. So I got scared because I thought my dad woke up and he's looking for me. And I'm like, I hope that he doesn't find me. Footsteps stops. So I'm guessing that someone just woke up and then drank water. My dad's phone called me. I was so scared at him that I ran upstairs, and as I got into the room, I saw him sleeping. And so I got curious, right? And I looked at his phone and noticed that the phone was off. And it is far away from him. Knowing that, I got scared because who called me? And so I jumped to the bed and I got my bed sheets cover me. I cannot move. I was scared that night, and I did not even flinch a muscle.
Well, I have a dream. I mean, a nightmare. I was in my dad's room, and then when I entered, there was this little girl behind me. I was like, why are you crying? Go home. Then turned out to be like a ghost. There was another story back in the Philippines. There's a window here. The white lady is right in the sitting inside, watching. Then my mom saw it close up. There was no face, just white dress. We're facing the stair, and my mom saw it coming down.
No one can explain what we saw or heard. We provide no solid proof other than these haunting memories. And then I began hearing more stories from other people, Some are even weirder than I imagined.
My family originates from a very small village in a very small state in North India. My mom is pretty big on family, so every winter break we go back and visit for a couple of weeks. The village's name is Gangat, and it's absolutely gorgeous. As soon as you step foot in Gangat, you can see from all sides around there are these rolling green hills, craggy mountain tops that glow gold and crimson when the sun sets. The people are wonderful too. I mean, they're always very friendly. After all, most of the people in the village are family. But the best part about Gangat isn't just the friendly people or the gorgeous scenery, it's the river. Now, the river in Gangat is kind of oddly shaped. It goes all the way around the perimeter of the village and goes back the way where it came from. The best way I can describe it is like a cul-de-sac. But anyways, you can't get in or out of Gangat without passing through the river. The river is basically the nexus of all social life in Gangat. I mean, if you walk by the river on any given day, you'll see people fishing, people just sunbathing by the sides, small children running around the middle of the river. It's pretty shallow. It's wider than it is deep. Sometimes during the winters, people will be selling hot chai when it gets really cold, or lemonade during the summer if it gets really hot. The river is where life happens in Gangat. And after a couple of days of being there, I began to notice something very strange. And that was, as soon as the sun began setting, people would look at each other and they would say in hushed tones, "We should probably get going." No one came to the river after sunset, and I found that kind of weird. So I asked my grandma why, and she said, "Well, it's not safe after sunset." And I asked why. I mean, I don't see any animals or snakes, or, I mean, if you can go there during daylight and it's not very deep, then why wouldn't you go there during the nighttime? And she said, "You know, it's not the animals or the snakes. It's the ghosts." And I said, "Okay. You know, I'm a very scientific-minded person. I don't put much stock into ghosts." And I was kind of surprised my grandma did. And she said, "Yes, there are ghosts. They're called Chudails. Actually, one of our family members was attacked by one." And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And that's how I learned the story of a man named Dave Sharma. Now, Dave Sharma was distantly related to my family from, like, generations past through marriage or some other convoluted genealogy. And he was a businessman. And businessman might be a bit of a misnomer because he was terrible at business. Like, everything he did completely failed. And one day, Dave, who was feeling kind of down on his luck, decided he would try something else for a bit, and he decided to go into horse businesses. And he would buy and sell horses from neighboring villages, and, you know, made his trade from that, and it was going well for a while. And one night, he was riding back, and he got delayed. There was a terrible snowstorm the day before, and the roads were muddy once the storm and snow had cleared up, so his horses didn't take to that too well. What that meant was that when Dave reached the river at night, it was pitch black. Now, Dave was also a rather scientific-minded person, so he didn't put much stock into ghosts and spirits. So he, knowing that the river was rather shallow, decided to make the cross anyways. Now, the river is shallow, meaning that it isn't completely water. In the middle of the river, there's sometimes these little islands or little raised platforms of land where people sometimes like to chill on, you know, hot days, or just little plateaus. And so Dave, you know, he used to cross the river and stop for a little bit at those little plateaus because it was a very wide river, and give his horses a break because they were still tired from the muddy roads from the day before. And then in one of those plateaus, he thought he heard a sound of crying, and he was confused because, after all, it was middle of the night. Who would be at the river at this time? And he started up his horses again, and he kept walking, and then halfway across the river, he saw a lady, and she was sitting on one of those little islands, and she was crying. And he felt kind of bad, and, you know, he's a nice guy, so he went up to her, and he asked, "Beti," which means daughter, "what's wrong?" And this lady was exceptionally beautiful. She was dressed in red dresses and red veils and long golden necklaces and bangles. She had makeup on, and she was wearing more than one dress, which meant that she was a bride. And she was crying, and she looked at him and she said, "I've lost my husband. My husband has left me, and he won't marry me anymore." And they knew what that meant, all the social ramifications and whatnot, so he felt very bad, and he sat down next to her and he said, "Listen, how about this? How about you get onto my horse, and I can take you across to Gangat, and we can try to find something to do for you there." There was not a sound on the river. There was no sound of birds, no sound of animals. The crickets had stopped chirping, the owls had stopped hooting. The silence was as deadening as was the black night. The moon had hidden behind an obsolete cloud, which is why Dave didn't notice, perhaps, what was wrong with the woman. He reached down to take her hand and to help her onto a horse. And then he realized something was horribly wrong. Because, see, the woman, her hands, they weren't quite right. Her palm was inverted, meaning that where ours should be facing down, her palm was facing upwards. Her fingers weren't there, just stubs. And Dave looked at her feet. Her feet were twisted, so they were pointing backwards. And then he looked at her face. And then he realized that behind that gorgeous wedding veil, there were no eyes. And then he realized that he had run into a Tridael. Now, Tridaels are pretty vengeful female goats. And this one was holding onto Dave's hand. Dave took one step back, two steps back. He tried to look for his horses, but his horse had been spooked and had run off across the river. He began to panic. He began running across the shallow waters, but the Tridael was too strong for him, and she grabbed onto him. And then, even though the river was shallow, she sank below the riverbed and began to pull him down. Dave felt the mud sucking at his feet, at his ankles, at his knees. He was halfway embedded in the river. The water was starting to come up to his mouth, and she was still pulling. And below him, he could hear her quietly singing, "I've got you now. I've got you. You're going to stay with me forever." And Dave knew that if he didn't get out at that moment, he would be gone. His wife would wake up the next morning and think that he had drowned in the river. So, with one Herculean effort, he pulled himself free of this mud and began to run across the river. He was splashing everything and ruining his best suit, but he didn't care at that point. He just took one more step forward, another step forward, trying to pull himself through the muddy mess the river had become. And he looked behind him and he saw the Tridael, and she was on her fours, and she was crawling behind him like some spidery nightmare. And as Dave was running across the river, he could feel her screaming and panting and coming closer and closer and closer. His legs still burned from where she had grabbed him and where she had pulled him from. And just when she was about to reach him, the miraculous happened. One of his horses had decided to return for his master. Now, this was Dave's horse. He had owned it for the past 10 years. It came back and it kicked the Tridael in the face and she began to scream. Dave quickly got on and ran off. But behind him, he could still hear her singing, "You'll be back. And when you come back, I'll be waiting for you." He got home and he took off his clothes and this went to sleep. And the next morning when he woke up, he screamed when his wife tried to pull him out of bed. So people didn't go to the river after that. I mean, they hadn't gone in the first place, but now seeing the living proof before them, they had no desire to. And he wasn't quite the same afterwards either. I mean, he did actually better in business than he had, and he died rather rich. But he lost all of his hair, and his eyes twitched side to side every single time someone spooked him. So, while the river is the lifeblood of Gangut, people don't go there in the night.
Some people would think, why me? Why do I have to experience this? To live in fear, thinking they are the unlucky one. One friend of mine told me their own story.
I was like in kindergarten. I don't really remember what happened, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw this lady in the corner of my room. Like, I've never seen her before in my life. And like, I ran to my mom and she's like, oh, don't worry. It's like, you're probably just having a nightmare. So I'm like, okay. So a couple of days later, we're going through our photo albums that we had because my dad had got a call that my aunt had passed, my great aunt had passed away. And so we're looking at the pictures and then they showed me who it was. My great aunt had passed away. And I told my mom, like, mom, that's the lady I saw in my room. And she was like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, mom, that's the lady that was in my room in the corner. And she's like, oh, well, that's your great aunt. And my mom's like, there's a saying that when someone's gonna pass away, that their spirit like goes by and says bye to everybody. And like, even though I've never met her, she still came to say bye to me.
And then the stories I hear become even more evil.
So I've had two experiences, actually. When I was a little girl and I went to Mexico, my parents would always warn me about the devil. And it was something that, like, never crossed my mind, and I wasn't, like, serious about it. But they'd always say, you know, like, se te va a aparecer el diablo. In Spanish, you know, like, translating to that is, like, the devil's gonna appear on you and stuff. I remember, like, I was a brat, and I wouldn't listen, and I wouldn't pay attention. And then one night, I was sleeping on the bed with my mom and my sister. They actually, like, left to go watch a movie. And then the house is set up in a way where it's, like, the bed is kind of, like, in direct correlation to where the kitchen is at. So it was like, I can lay my head and I can look at the kitchen and I can look at people that are coming and going and coming and going, right? I just remember, just thinking about it, I just remember like looking at this red shadow of a person and they were like messing with the keys and stuff. And when I was little, like I screamed so loud because I was terrified, like, I was like, what the heck is going on? I ran to where my mom, my sister, and my aunties and my cousins were watching TV. And they're like, someone's in the kitchen. Someone's in the kitchen. And they're like, who is it? Who is it? Why'd you scream so bad? They tried to get me to explain what happened. They're just like, what were they doing? Were they holding the keys? And I never told them I saw a red shadow. It was disfigured. I still remember it to this day. They kept asking me questions, and I'm just like, oh, that's it. You know, like, it was probably just one of my uncles that came in and stuff. The second experience that I had with that encounter was when a few years later, like, my mother told me, you have to go and finish this. And I was just like, I'm just going to do it later. I don't care, you know. And then I went to the bathroom, and I was, like, doing my nails. And I was just like, whatever, it doesn't matter, you know? And then all of a sudden, everything just is quiet and super still. And I start to hear, like, this devilish laugh in my ear. And it's just like, oh, God, I hated it so much. I was like, what the heck is this? And it was just, you know, like, the stereotypical laugh that you hear from, like, really scary, manly voice. And it was, like, right next to my ear. And I just dropped the nail polish. And I was just like, I didn't care. I messed up my whole entire nails. And then I walked out and I'm just like, you know, like really scared. And of course I didn't tell my mom because I knew that she was going to like tell me, oh, well, I told you so. Like I keep warning you and stuff. And then after that, you know, I completely left super shaken. You know that feeling where you feel like everything just like your blood pressure drops, your heart drops to your stomach and you're like in total shock. That's how I was because I was like, I cannot believe I just heard this. And I remember also my mom telling me how it was like when she wouldn't listen to her mom, she would hear that same laugh. And she heard it two times. While she was in Mexico, she was like, super angry at her brothers because they were playing outside, and she said that she just heard someone laughing, and it was like a very scary kind of laugh, the same laugh that I heard. And she was like, why are you guys laughing? Like, who is this, you know? Is it you guys? And they just look at her like crazy, like, no, it's not.
The night is a silent, lonesome hour when people begin to sleep in the comfort of their homes. But they are unaware that beneath the peaceful facade lies something sinister. Something trying to crawl out into the surface. Desperate voices begging to be heard. So whenever you are with your friends and family watching the Seahawks game, a girl dressed in white is probably standing on the corner of the room. When you think you are lonely, reading Facebook posts or laughing at short vines or YouTube videos of cute dogs and cats, that tapping sound on your window is probably not the rain or a tree branch. Or when you are brushing your teeth in the bathroom mirror, a disfigured face is behind you in your reflection, staring back at you with blood-red eyes. When you think that the night is lonely, that the darkness is empty, think again, because there is always something out there, and it's only waiting for you to notice. But still, you won't know. You would never understand. You would never believe me or them until you feel or see for yourself.
And I hope you do.
This podcast could not have been done without the help of Mimonza Dogra for contributing her report, Genesis Garcia, Jacqueline Limon, and the Kawagdan family, Mark, Justin, and Edelwin, for sharing their true stories. Thanks also to my executive producer, Lola Garcia, and editor, Jenny Arsarno. Oh, and a quick birthday shout-out to Kendra Hanna, one of Radioactive's advanced producers. Want to hear more stories? Visit kuow.org/radioactive and find us on Facebook and Twitter. This is Radioactive and Maria Del Mar Kawagdan signing off. Have a scary Halloween night, and I hope you have a good night's sleep.